Radio Prague News.
The EU Health Commissioner Marcos Kyprianou has met Czech Health Ministry officials to discuss measures concerning a potential outbreak of bird flu. Mr. Kyprianou also said the Czech Republic faces sanctions from the EU unless it toughens its anti-smoking legislation. And some members of the opposition Civic Democrats have accused Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek of taking political advantage of the bill on registered partnerships of same-sex couples. The EU Health Commissioner Marcos Kyprianou has met Czech Health Ministry officials in Prague to discuss measures concerning a potential outbreak of bird flu, among them the country's emergency plan and strategic stockpiles of antiviral drugs and other medicines. According to the Czech Chief Hygiene Officer Michael Vít, Mr. Kyprianou said the Czech Republic was well prepared for a potential epidemic of bird flu. The EU Health Commissioner Marcos Kyprianou also told reporters on Monday that unless the Czech Republic implements European anti-smoking legislation and restricts tobacco advertising, it faces sanctions from the EU. Mr. Kyprianou said the European Commission will ask the Czech Republic to toughen its anti-smoking legislation. If the requirement is not met, Mr. Kyprianou said there is a number of steps, including sanctions, which the EU could apply. Some members of the opposition Civic Democrats have accused Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek of taking political advantage of the bill on registered partnerships of same-sex couples due to be voted on by the lower house this week. In a statement released on Monday, they said Mr. Paroubek is trying to politically appropriate the bill and to present himself as its sole guarantor, which, as they said, may discourage some Civic Democrat deputies from voting for the bill. Both the lower house and the Senate have passed the bill, but President Václav Klaus vetoed it last month. To override the veto, the lower house now needs a majority of 101 votes in the 200-seat chamber. The Agriculture Ministry is considering distributing information leaflets on bird flu to every household in the Czech Republic, Agriculture Minister Jan Mládek said on Monday. He added that the ministry is assessing the costs of such a campaign. He said leaflets telling consumers how to handle food products in order to minimize the risk of infection are ready for distribution. And finally, a glance at the weather. The next couple of days should be partly cloudy, with daytime temperatures hovering just above freezing. My name's Pavla Horáková, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Linda Maštalíš. In today's program, we discuss the possibilities of a grand coalition in Czech politics. 60 years have passed since Winston Churchill made his famous Iron Curtain speech. 3 Czech auction records were broken over the weekend. And in sports, Jakub Janda places second at the World Cup event in Finland. And in this week's one-on-one, Rob Cameron speaks with Tereza Kodičková from the Gay and Lesbian League. All that coming up, so please stay tuned. General elections are less than 3 months away, and the current state of voter preferences indicates that neither the ruling Social Democrats nor the opposition Civic Democrats may be in a position to form a majority government. Yet, the very idea of a grand coalition remains taboo. The suggestion that the Civic and Social Democrats could enter into a grand coalition in order to change the electoral system from proportional to majority, made by Member of European Parliament Jan Zahradil last week, sparked heated denials from both parties. Daniela Lazarová has been following developments and joins me in the studio now. So, Daniela, has the grand coalition scenario been firmly ruled out?
Well, Linda, both parties have gone to great pains to do so. The issue was thrashed to death in political debates over the weekend, and both the Social and Civic Democrats claim that although a grand coalition might be the easy way out of a stalemate, they would be betraying their political program and indeed their supporters by entering into such a deal. The Social Democrat Prime Minister, Mr. Paroubek, said it would be a tragic mistake on their part, and a senior Civic Democratic party official said the chances of this actually happening were practically nil, as he put it. Well, having said that, the two parties are clearly defending their interests here, and the fact that Mr. Zahragil spoke as he did, and the fact that President Klaus is allegedly not opposed to a grand coalition, has sown a seed of doubt in people's minds. I spoke earlier to political analyst Jiří Pehe and asked him whether a grand coalition could benefit the country in any way.
Its possible success or failure really depend on whether the two parties decide to use the grand coalition mainly for dividing the spoils of power, or whether they decide to use it to implement a reform program. In some ways, we may have reasonable compromises, for example, in such areas as the pension reform or healthcare reform and so on. Moreover, compromises that will last, because if such reforms are implemented by a grand coalition, they will not be challenged by the next government.
That sounds like a very positive outlook, but MEP Jan Zahradil said that the purpose of such a coalition would be primarily to change the electoral system from proportional to majority. But would it be that simple to change the electoral system?
Not really. The Social Democrats and the Civic Democrats have tried to do so in the past and failed. According to Czech law, this is a constitutional amendment, which means it needs a lot of support. So in addition to a majority in the lower house, the two parties would also need to win a majority in the Senate, which they don't now have. Now, I'm sure that as an MEP, Mr. Zahradil knows all this. So the question is, why stir the political waters as he did? It could have been a tactical move calculated to bring the communists closer to the Social Democrats and so to damage the latter's image ahead of the elections, or else the party could simply just have been testing the waters. But in any case, the very possibility of a grand coalition will certainly make the smaller parties work twice as hard to bolster their position in the remaining 3 months before the elections.
That was Daniela Lazarová there with that update on the Czech elections. The Cold War held the political world on edge until its end in 1991, when the Soviet Union fell. This significant rift in international relations overshadowed world politics for over 45 years. 60 years have passed since Winston Churchill delivered his famous Iron Curtain speech, which is widely regarded as the beginning of the Cold War. Chris Jarrett takes a look at the impact of the Iron Curtain on Czechoslovak borders.
From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an Iron Curtain has descended across the continent. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe.
With these words, the world first heard the term the Iron Curtain, as Winston Churchill delivered his Sinews of Peace speech in Fulton, Missouri, on March the 5th, 1946. He referred to the divide in Europe between the self-governing nations of the West and those in Eastern Europe under Soviet communist control. The speech is viewed by many historians as marking the beginning of the Cold War, the economic and ideological struggle which would dominate international politics for the next 45 years. Jan Srb, spokesman for the Office of the Documentation and Investigation of the Crimes of Communism.
After the communist putsch in Czechoslovakia in 1948, the state borders of Western Europe were gradually cut off. That means with Austria and West Germany. Following February 1948, border units were reinforced after people began fleeing to the West. And in 1952, we saw the beginning of the real Iron Curtain. That means barbed wire, electrified barriers, and also landmines. That was the situation until 1965, when the West pressured Czechoslovakia to remove the electric fences. But of course, the borders remained heavily guarded for the whole period of communist Czechoslovakia, right up until November 1989.
But Czechoslovaks were not the only ones to suffer from the Iron Curtain in the country. A number of foreigners also fell victim to the 650 guards who defended the border, as the recent book Organization and Activity of Armed Border Forces, which was issued by the Office for the Documentation and Investigation of the Crimes of Communism, reveals. it was discovered that over 280 civilians, including 70 from outside Czechoslovakia, perished trying to escape the country. Jan Serb explains.
There were, of course, citizens of Czechoslovakia, but among them were also citizens of Austria, Poland, East and West Germany, Yugoslavia, Hungary and so on. The circumstances of their deaths were also surveyed and divided according to who was shot, that's more than 140, and who died on the electric fences, that's around 95. Some people died from stepping on landmines or drowned in the rivers along the border.
But the book estimates the death toll may in fact have been much higher. Jan Serb again.
With regard to the number of dead at the borders at the time, the figure is not complete and probably never will be. We, of course, have information from the archives, but a good many people at the beginning of the 1950s simply vanished without a trace. They may have ended up in secret mass graves. There are many dead without names.
Chris Jarrett with that report. The Czech Republic's art and antique auction houses certainly have a season to look forward to if this year's opening auction at the Dorotheum Auction House in Prague is anything to go by. Three records were broken on Saturday. Items valued at 14 million crowns, a little over half a million U.S. dollars, were sold for 22 million crowns, that is, 900,000 U.S. dollars, the best turnover that the country's established houses have ever witnessed. Saturday also attracted a record 300 potential buyers, opposed to the average 200. A Baroque wardrobe valued at 180,000 crowns was auctioned off for a staggering 2 million crowns, that's 83,000 U.S. dollars, a record in the category of furniture. Dita Asiadu met up with Dorotheum's Maria Galova to see what lies behind this record-breaking start to the season.
I think that one reason is that also at the world art market there is a boom now, so the prices are growing up, and also maybe the number of persons who are interested in art market and who would like to invest in art market, it's much higher than 2, 3, 4 years before. And the second one, that the offer of the items was very high level one.
Of course, most of our listeners, when they hear about auctions, they think of London, they think of Paris, they think of New York. They wouldn't think of Prague. What's the tradition here in this country?
It's a little bit difficult because we do not have really tradition. Of course, during this communist period, everything was interrupted. So it was a big tradition before 50s. But then we started again, and it was in 1990. And we could say that it started at zero. And at the time, the turnover was at the Czech market about 50 million crowns, and now it is about 300 million crowns. So it's somewhere totally different.
300 clients. What percentage of that is Czech?
About 50%.
So what kind of people actually come and bid for items? Are they art collectors or entrepreneurs? Who comes here?
All of them, of course. Mostly they are collectors, some of them are investors, and some of them are people who are just interested in art. And a lot of people from abroad, from other countries, contacted us as dealers and as the owners of auction houses there.
What items, or what are some of the main items that were auctioned off on Saturday?
The biggest item and the most important one was Emile Antoine Bourdelle's sculpture. It's a very famous one, the Heracles Archer, the sculpture which is in collection in New York, in Dorsay in Paris, and also at the National Gallery in Prague. And we bought a smaller one.
If I remember correctly, then it was valued, or it was worth almost half a million crowns and ended up being sold for 4 million.
Yes, finally it was bought for 4.7 million crowns, which is a great price, of course. But it's something like unbelievable price at the Czech market.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Linda Maštalíš. Now to sports, which saw success in Scandinavia, and Jaromír Jágr reaches another milestone.
Czech ski jumper Jakub Janda, who leads the World Cup standings, saw a return to form this weekend, finishing second at the World Cup event in Lahti, Finland. Janda was competing for the first time since his disappointing showing at the Olympics, where he finished out of the medals in both events. He led the competition after the first round, but was passed by hometown jumper Jane Haponen in the second. The second place finish means that Janda extends his lead in the season's overall standings to 112 points over Jane Ahonen, who managed only a disappointing 20th place. Although he lost out on the victory, Janda was very satisfied with his performance.
I'm happy with my second place finish because I was out of form for some time now. And my coach and I started to work on something I thought had mastered but hadn't. We focused on it, and already in the qualification I saw that things were going well. I waited to see how it would go, and it went well.
Marathon cross-country skier Stanislav Řezáč finished fourth at the Vasaloppet in Sweden on Sunday. This was only one position behind his best finish on the podium in 2003. Řezáč managed to keep up with the lead group of four skiers over the 90-kilometer course, but he didn't have the strength in the final sprint to the line. Sweden's Daniel Tinal finished ahead of countryman Jerry Arhlin and Norwegian legend Anders Aukland to take the win. In the weekend's Czech football first division action, Slovan Liberec was able to open up a 7-point lead on second place Teplice and 8 points on third place Slavia Prague after the two contenders managed only to eke out draws at home to inferior competition. Liberec took home 4 points from Slovacko with a 2-1 win on Sunday after scoring in the second minute of injury time. The Czech ice hockey Extraliga moves into its final round with three teams jostling for the final two playoff spots. Newly promoted Česká Budějovice assured itself a place in the 8-team playoff after defeating Vsetín at the weekend. Last year's champion Pardubice is on the outside looking in right now, 3 points behind Sparta and 2 behind Třinec, which currently hold the last two spots. All that can change on Thursday, however, when the three competitors all host teams assured a playoff spot. Finally today, Czech hockey winger Jaromír Jágr passed another milestone last week with a 3-point performance against the Philadelphia Flyers. The New York Rangers star netted 2 goals and added an assist to pass Finland's Jari Kari as the all-time leading scorer among Europeans in the NHL. Jágr now stands at an even 1,400 points, good enough for 17th on the all-time list.
Now in this week's One-on-One, Rob Cameron speaks with Tereza Kodičková from Prague's Gay and Lesbian League.
On Tuesday morning, the lower house will meet to discuss whether to overrule President Klaus's veto of one of the most controversial acts of legislation passed by the Czech Parliament since the fall of communism. The bill on registered partnership, approved by Parliament but vetoed by the President, would give gay couples many of the rights enjoyed by heterosexual married couples, and the sexually liberal Czech Republic would become the first post-communist country in the EU to fully legalise gay marriage. To talk about the issues raised by this controversial legislation, I've been speaking to Tereza Kodičková, spokesperson for the Gay and Lesbian League.
If we can begin with you, if I can ask you a personal question at the beginning, when did you know that you were gay?
At the age of 24.
24, so it took you some time.
Oh, yeah.
And is that, do you think, an experience which is shared by many gay and lesbian people, that it takes them a while to sort of discover their sexual orientation?
I think this is the case more in women. That's it. I know it's more frequent in women to find out later.
If you can compare what life is like for gay and lesbian people now in the Czech Republic and what you know it was like before 1989 during the communist period, how different was it then?
Well, they were persecuted, so life was very difficult. It was completely impossible to be gay or lesbian publicly, which is not the case now, but paradoxically, particularly among the older generation, or not the completely young generation rather, people still have the same fears they used to have before. So they refuse to come out, which means that the community is almost equally invisible to the previous times, which I think is a pity. And when I've spoken to the people who have come out, apart from a very few exceptions, they always said, well, you know, it was much less horrible than I had thought, which means that the fears people have are not grounded any longer, but they still have them.
What was it like for you personally coming out?
It was quite easy, I would say, because I was away. I was studying abroad and I came back and things were different. And then I thought, well, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth thinking all the time, okay, did I use the right pronoun and did I cover it up sufficiently? So I just decided not to bother. And I told practically everyone. And, well, some people disappeared from my life. Most of them remained. And now being the spokesperson, it's a good way of coming out because then you don't have to tell anyone at all.
No explanation because, needed.
Yeah, no explanation needed. So that's quite good. Oh, that was not easy. That was not easy. And it wouldn't be easy still, be not for the fact that now I'm actually seeing a man. So my parents are more than happy and they're hoping for me to, I don't know, get married very soon and stuff like that. But yeah, they never ever accepted it.
The Czech Republic seems to me a very, very tolerant country, especially in matters of sexuality. The Czech Republic is often described as one of the most sexually liberal countries in Europe, if not the world. Does that extend to the way the population views the gay community?
Well, they... Czech population is quite lazy in being violent towards anyone.
So it's a matter of laziness, is it?
Partly, since it is a fairly secular society, people don't have the strong arguments against, we know from countries where religion plays a bigger role. But usually when you live the life, you see that the tolerance is of the kind... okay, let them do whatever until they come into my life. And if they do, I just don't want to see them. I don't want to be near them. On the other hand, this is the beginning. And if you actually manage to take the person to a cafe and talk to them for 3 hours, usually the end is, well, you know, actually, yeah, you know, you're quite normal, actually.
And has that happened to you? Is that your own personal experience?
Oh,
that
indeed.
You've
many
convinced
times.
Someone?
Many times. Many times. It's just a matter of knowing what to say and not taking the stuff the people say personally.
One person you haven't convinced is the president of this country, Václav Klaus. He recently vetoed legislation that would allow registered partnerships, i.e. would allow gay people like yourself to live almost in exactly the same way as heterosexual couples. Where do you think his opposition stems from? Because he's given many sort of reasons for it, but where do you think the opposition really lies with him?
As he says, his opinion is stable and long-term. So basically it's just, well, I have to say it, homophobia. And of course you can always find all sorts of reasons to cover the fact that you just don't like the people and that you don't want to live them the same way you do because you think that your way of life is in some way better or more useful or whatever. But the base, and I think he doesn't even try to cover it, is that he just doesn't want it.
But he did explain it by saying that there was just not enough political support in the parliament for this law, pointing out that only 86 MPs originally voted in favour of the bill, which is far from overwhelming expression of support, isn't it?
Yes, but the bill has been approved. So the parliament expressed enough of support for the bill to be approved. And there are other bills that have passed by one vote. So I don't quite see... Well, again, it's just a justification of his dislike for this bill.
Now, he's invited representatives of the gay community to come to the castle and discuss the matter with him. And you said no. Why?
We didn't say no.
But the gay groups said they refused his
Some of them... Some
invitation.
Of the, one group said no, the other group, that's us, said yes. Because we feel that he is the president And if we refused, he would have yet another argument to say, you know, they don't even want to talk to me, so why should I support them? Personal meetings always, always give you chance. So we have decided to use it.
So you think, given the opportunity of sitting down with him face to face, that you'll be able to persuade him?
Not that, probably. But my experience as the spokesperson has been that when the people see you and they have the opportunity to talk to you, something changes for them.
Right. Opponents have pointed out that the point of marriage is to raise children. So why give this right to gay couples? How would you answer that criticism?
Well, the Family Act says that the main cause of marriage is to raise children. There are also many other justifications for marriage, such as mutual, be it economic, social, psychological support the people give to each other. That's one thing. There are many childless marriages and they have not been cancelled for the fact that there are no children in the marriage. That's one thing. And the other thing is that many gay couples do raise children, be it from previous marriages or from the current relationship they live in. So this argument doesn't work either. On the other hand, I know that there are people who have been through the communist times and they see this as the country saying, OK, we now take you as full-fledged citizens and we do accept you for this.
Right. So for many gay couples, it's about recognition.
Mm-hmm.
OK. Well, Teresa, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
One-on-One brings us to the end of today's programme. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, from me, Linda Mastalis, and everyone here at Radio Prague, goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9860, 11600. 17h30, 17h57. Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57. Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27. Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.